Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is George Bible, who's a professor of mechanical engineering at the University of North Dakota and the author of Trainwreck, The Forensics of Rail Disasters. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Bible.
Hello, thank you.
And George, it looks as though this train derailment and crash that rail cars toppled onto traffic on an interstate just outside of Seattle, it does seem that this was like an inaugural run for a fast-track commuter train from Seattle to Portland, and it was rounding a curve. So what do you know so far, given that this was an inaugural run, I believe, for a fast train, and it apparently was doing about 81 miles an hour, which by European standards is not that fast. But my understanding is that they made this new rail line as straight as possible, yet the crash occurred on a curve, apparently.
Well, they mostly do derail on curves because that's where you have centrifugal force trying to shove the train off the tracks normally. So if something else goes wrong, they're most likely to derail on a curve.
And in this case, what's your understanding about the new tracks themselves? I mean, to have a high-speed train, I assume you have to improve the tracks, which I believe get pretty worn down by freight traffic, don't they?
Well, I everything I hear, I think, is preliminary. I had heard this track was limited to 79 miles an hour, which is the standard speed limit for all Amtrak tracks, trains nationwide, which was set in 1947 after a high-speed collision. So unless they have additional safety features, 79 miles an hour is the default speed limit. And nowadays, the additional safety features is positive train control. But to get back to your question, yes, as the trains go faster, you need truer, straighter, higher geometric standards on the track so the trains don't bounce off the tracks.
And given that this is an inaugural run for what was billed as a high-speed rail, commuter rail, from Seattle to Portland, do we know whether this was a new track?
Well, I don't know. An inaugural run, in my mind, does that mean first for this train, or first for this high-speed train, or first for these tracks? They're all different things, so I'm not sure that's been clearly defined.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people aboard the train that weren't injured or were not so badly injured reported that it did happen on a track. And the train started to wobble, and then it just tipped. And apparently, some of the rail cars went over the trestle onto an interstate, and that's where a number of cars were crushed. I believe on the ground there weren't so many fatal injuries, which is pretty surprising, but most of the fatal injuries were actually in the rail carriages. Is that your understanding?
Yes. Surprisingly, a high-speed derailment is quite survivable. Usually what kills people is if you crush the car by derailing into something solid, or the other thing, now you can always get tossed badly and break your neck. And a 2015 accident in Philadelphia, four of the eight dead were found outside underneath the car, and there are a lot of damaged windows, so getting tossed from the train is problematic, kind of like being tossed out of your car in a car accident if you don't have your seatbelt on.
Well, but they don't have seatbelts on trains, do they?
That's correct. But if you're thrown from a car, you got a high probability of breaking your neck.
Sure, but has there been any talk of seatbelts on a train? Derailments are rare, but obviously we're talking about one today, and you mentioned the one earlier in Philadelphia that was also going too fast around a curve, wasn't it?
Yes, well, I don't know that this one is going too fast around a curve yet. That's preliminary information. Actually, they mostly derail because of broken equipment. I just looked up the number of derailments so far this year. It's 254. It's not that uncommon. Of course, these are mostly freight trains, and only three of them derailed from going too fast on a curve, so it's actually rare. But it happened in Philadelphia. It happened in Spain, 2013. They're, both cases, they're going about twice the speed limit. In Spain, they killed 59 because they had the misfortune of derailing into a massive solid concrete bridge abutment.
Well, it's apparently, and this is something I wanted to get some clarity on from you, George Bible, is that the rails that that these new train services, in this case, this new high speed train service, they share with freight trains, right? My understanding is that Amtrak doesn't, subsidize, it doesn't make much of a profit at all. But the rail systems, the freight systems, are the profitable part of railways in this country. Is that accurate?
Yes, the last time I looked, the only passenger trains making money are in the highly populated Northeast Corridor, where they are, really are running high-speed trains 120 miles an hour and even 150 miles an hour in a small portion. There seems to be a sweet spot, something like 200 to 400 miles an hour, where fast trains are more popular than flying, especially trains can go from city center to city center, and you don't have to fiddle around going to remote airports.
Well, that's in Europe and in Japan, the bullet trains. We don't have it. Well, the Acela is that one that you're referring to, I guess, on the Northeast Corridor.
Yes.
And it doesn't have a dedicated line, does it? It has to slow down every now and then. So it only reaches, 120 miles an hour in little bursts. It doesn't. It's not a sustained speed, is it?
Yes. In fact, I think it's kind of amazing. I think there's something like 140 interchanges, essentially train intersections. They have to slow down and kind of turn their way through those. And it's a big problem. The solution is to make a much bigger radius curve, and you can't do that in metropolitan areas without tearing out neighborhoods.
So what's the likelihood that we will move in this direction? I believe that the efforts here in California are to have a high-speed train that is a dedicated track that's straight. And, of course, it goes through the California desert. So that's not a problem. But there's been a lot of hostility towards it. The Governor Brown has tried to champion it, but the federal government has not been helpful, including local congresspeople. But now the president himself comes out today when he's talking about national security. He mentions that infrastructure is a big part of national security, and he cites this train accident as reason for the need to invest in infrastructure.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I'm an engineering professor. I'm not into the. I'm not here to talk about politics.
Well, it wasn't about. I wasn't talking about politics so much as to suggest that there is, obviously, it's controversial getting these kind of investments, even when the president calls for it today, as he did. What I understand is that the only real high-speed rail possibility in this country is the one in California, is it not? And it's not exactly taking off, it's not flying off the ground, is it?
Well, they've been studying it and continue to study it in many locations, and it always has two problems. It's extremely expensive, and eventually you're going to be building through a lot of neighborhoods, and that people are typically not happy about that.
No.
It's easier in other countries to see someone as property than seems to be the tradition in this country.
Well, as you know, the president tweeted out today, $7 trillion spent in the Middle East while our roads, bridges, tunnels, railways, and more crumble, not for long. So do you think that there will be some kind of new investment in infrastructure? I mean, I take it it's needed. In the work that you do, does infrastructure play a role in the accidents that you studied?
Well, there's wear and tear. In fact, high on the list of derailments is a broken track, roughly a third. But the rails wear out. It's something like almost 250,000 potholes every year in New York City. So it doesn't matter how much you spend, you're still going to have wear and tear issues on the rail. Now, obviously, they spend a lot of money on infrastructure, and a lot is needed. That takes in an awful lot of things, but most of the railroads tracks are privately owned and privately maintained, and I think they do a pretty good job. Now, things are going to break, but we kill 30,000-40,000 people a year in car accidents. It's just you're not going to have 100% safety no matter what you do.
But when you say the rail lines are privately owned, they're largely owned by the rail companies that haul freight, right? Not by Amtrak.
That's correct. Amtrak, I don't think owns. I don't know if they own any track. If they do, it's not a lot.
Right. So does that mean then that the freight companies that own the tracks and maintain them, basically, they take care of their business first, right? Amtrak would be second.
Yes, but they want safe tracks too. So unsafe tracks are equal problem for them.
Right, but their trains don't go as fast, do they? Freight trains.
That's correct.
So, tell us about this positive train control, because I believe that there was an effort after the Philadelphia crash to institute that across the country, but that's been stalled, I think, because of Washington politics. What's your understanding?
Well, it was mandated by an act of Congress in 2008 after the crash in Los Angeles that killed 25 people, where the driver was texting. And actually, it was studied by the Federal Railroad Administration twice and rejected because it was didn't meet their standard cost-benefit analysis. But Congress passed it anyhow, as they're entitled to do after that terrible accident in 2008. And it was mandated to be complete by the end of 2016, but it was a massive technical problem, and they never made it. In fact, the train said, we're not going to operate in violation of the law. We'll park our trains if it comes to that. So Congress kind of at the last minute passed a three-year or longer extension. It kind of, they have to negotiate route by route with the FRA. So they're still working on it, and there are some, there's been lots of progress made. There are some individual lines here and there with it working, but I don't know what was the situation on this particular track with today's accident.
And what's the FRA?
The Federal Railroad Administration. They're analogous to the FAA.
Right. So they're investigating this derailment in Seattle or south of Seattle?
They'll be there too, but the National Transportation Safety Board has legal control over all transportation accidents. But, mm-hmm. And they make safety recommendations, which is, they've been recommending positive train control for a number of years, but the Federal Railroad Administration actually writes the safety rules and enforces them. So there's two different government entities involved in a train wreck, the NTSB and the FRA.
And what improvements were brought about after the Philadelphia derailment? Because driver of that train was driving considerably faster, wasn't he, than that curve allowed?
Well, positive train control would have prevented that. It won't. Most train wrecks are because of derailment. Something breaks, and positive train control will not solve that problem. It will solve driving too fast on a curve. So the improvement is to implement PTC, but it's already being implemented as fast as it can, as they're able to do it.
But it wasn't. But it wasn't. At play in this derailment in Seattle, right? Do we know?
Well, I don't think we know anything yet. It could be. That's the list of possibilities, but I think I mentioned earlier there are 254 derailments so far this year. Only three were too fast on a curve. Most of them are equipment failure. There are other human errors, but they usually involve handling a long freight train, which is a lot more complicated than a short passenger train.
Well, just in closing, George Bible, I know there's been an effort on the part of Amtrak to attract riders, and obviously, here in Los Angeles, there's an effort underway to get more people to take the light rail. The investments have been made, very expensive investments in it. Given it was the inaugural run, is this going to, it's not going to attract more people to taking rail, which seems to be a kind of campaign that Amtrak have been pushing for some time?
Well, these kinds of accidents obviously are not good, but travel by train is significantly safer than travel by car.
Well, George Bible, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with George Bible, who's a professor of mechanical engineering at the University of North Dakota and the author of Trainwreck, The Forensics of Rail Disasters. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.